Have you ever been caught off guard with the simple question, "What do you think?" While others await your response, you feel uncomfortable, anxious, even terrified. Whether posed by a boss in a meeting, a colleague in an elevator, or an executive in an interview, these sudden questions intimidate us and demand quick, clear answers. This fear of impromptu communication is more terrifying for many than insects, heights, or darkness, and it's holding us back professionally and personally. Matt Abrahams, a Stanford Graduate School of Business lecturer whose Think Fast, Talk Smart workshop has become legendary among MBA students, executives, and TED speakers, offers a counterintuitive insight. The key to mastering spontaneous communication isn't innate talent, but practice and practice. His methodology has transformed anxious speakers into confident communicators at companies like Google, Nike, and the NBA. As Baba Shiv, Stanford marketing professor, notes, Matt's approach doesn't just make you a better communicator, it makes you a better thinker. When faced with unexpected speaking situations, most of us experience an immediate fight-or-flight response. Racing heart, dry mouth, trembling limbs. Our brains become overwhelmed and we struggle to form coherent thoughts. This anxiety isn't just uncomfortable, it actively undermines our ability to communicate effectively. The good news is that we can learn to manage this anxiety rather than letting it control us. The first step is understanding our personal anxiety symptoms, which typically fall into three categories: affective, mood-related feelings like stress and vulnerability; behavioral/physiologic, sweating, trembling, rapid speech; and cognitive, going blank, obsessing over being watched, experiencing negative thoughts. For affective symptoms, mindfulness is key. Acknowledge your uncomfortable feelings rather than ignoring or suppressing them. Create psychological distance by saying, "I'm experiencing anxiety," instead of, "I am anxious." Research shows that simply reframing anxiety as excitement by saying, "I'm excited," aloud before speaking can significantly improve performance. To address physical symptoms, focus on deep, extended breathing. The secret lies in your exhalations. Make them twice as long as your inhalations. Count to 3 while inhaling, 6 while exhaling, to calm your nervous system within seconds. To speak more slowly, deliberately slow your body movements, as we naturally synchronize our speech with our gestures. Combat trembling by moving slowly, reduce flushing by cooling your body with something cold, and fight dry mouth by drinking warm water or chewing gum before speaking. For cognitive symptoms, counter negative self-talk with positive mantras like, "I have value to add," or "I've improvised my way out of tough situations before." If you go blank, buy time by repeating what you just said. Repetition not only gives you recovery time, but helps your audience remember important points. You can also gain time by asking generic questions to your audience. Rationalize your fears by asking yourself what the real odds are of blanking completely. And remember the spotlight effect. People are too concerned with their own impression to notice your mistakes. Filler words like and like become problematic when used excessively. The solution lies in breathing. It's impossible to speak while inhaling. The technique is to synchronize your speech with your breathing, running out of breath at the end of each sentence, forcing yourself to inhale between sentences. This eliminates filler words and creates natural pauses that allow your audience to process what you've said. For long-term anxiety management, create a personalized anxiety management plan by selecting 3 to 5 techniques that address your specific symptoms and creating an acronym to remember them easily. Examples include BOOM, Be Present, Observe Movements, Oxygenate, Mantras, or ARCH, Acknowledge Normalcy, Rationalize, Cool Down, Self-Help. Your aim isn't a quick fix, but an ongoing experiment to be tested and adjusted as needed. Controlling anxiety frees you to be more natural and authentic when speaking spontaneously. You become bolder, more agile, more playful, and more attuned to your audience's needs. As one executive discovered after implementing these techniques, I'm not afraid anymore. I'm just me. When it comes to spontaneous speaking, good enough is great. To communicate effectively in the moment, we must abandon the pursuit of perfection and embrace mediocrity. The game Shout the Wrong Name demonstrates how our brains struggle when we try to do something wrong, pointing at objects and naming them incorrectly, revealing how our desire for excellence can hinder our spontaneous communication. Paradoxically, the more mediocre we allow ourselves to be, the better communicators we become. When we try to get it right in spontaneous speech, our brains resort to mental shortcuts or heuristics to handle cognitive overload. These automatic responses help us function efficiently, but limit our spontaneity and ability to be present. As Ellen Langer's experiment with the word because demonstrated, these shortcuts make us respond automatically without truly processing the situation, causing us to miss important nuances and opportunities for deeper connection with our conversational partners. Heuristics also limit our creativity. As illustrated by Tina Seelig's experiment with Stanford students, following predetermined mental rules prevents us from generating innovative solutions. While most teams created conventional businesses with their $5, the winning team sold their 3-minute presentation slot to a company earning $650. Similarly, when a disruptive student shouted, "I love spaghetti," in class, the author broke his usual heuristic of ignoring or punishing, creatively throwing the student a packet of Parmesan cheese and saying, "Now that's the right way to eat spaghetti," a spontaneous response that connected with the entire class. To improve our communication, we don't need to eliminate heuristics completely, but become more aware of the mental shortcuts we habitually take. We can learn to disconnect them to be more agile and adaptable in communication situations. One approach is to be alert to situations where we normally use heuristics, especially under stress, and manage that stress by taking care of ourselves, slowing down, or rationalizing. We can also learn by observing others use heuristics and avoiding those patterns, reflecting on our own actions, or deliberately shaking up our thinking by changing our environment or routines. When we play Shout the Wrong Name, many participants criticize themselves for not being creative enough or not getting it wrong enough, despite the rules simply asking for an incorrect name. This tendency to constantly judge ourselves stems from a culture that emphasizes performance and perfection. We've been rewarded our whole lives for doing things correctly and punished for getting things wrong. We also judge ourselves to feel in control of unpredictable situations. However, this perfectionism hampers our cognitive ability and can prevent us from acting at all. To stop judging ourselves so harshly, we can simply give ourselves permission to do what's needed, nothing more and nothing less. Instead of striving for perfection, we focus on conveying information. Improvisers adopt this principle with the mantra, "Good enough is great," and "Dare to be boring." As expert Dan Klein says, when you try to be original, you sound like everyone else trying to be original. But when you're obvious, you're yourself. We can reduce our reflexive judgment by practicing acceptance of mistakes, seeing them as lost takes in movie filming. Just as a film crew makes multiple versions to expand options, we can think of our communications as opportunities to test approaches. This removes pressure from each interaction, turning each encounter into a take that illuminates how to improve our communication. Mistakes, rather than diminishing us, empower us. Many of us approach spontaneous interactions as if they were formal performances, feeling as if we're on stage being critically evaluated. This perception increases pressure and leads to constant self-monitoring. Instead, we should reframe these situations as conversations, which are more informal and familiar. To achieve this, we can adjust our language using more inclusive terms like "we" instead of formal and distant expressions, ask more questions to create two-way interactions, and avoid the memorization trap, which gives our communication an overly rehearsed and rigid feel. Just as improv expert Dan Klein intentionally gets lost during his walks to discover unexpected wonders like hidden urban oases, we can benefit from suspending our habitual expectations during spontaneous communication. Stress leads us to view spontaneous communication as a threat, triggering defensive postures, accelerated breathing, and sharp messages. By reframing it as an opportunity, our bodies open up, our tone becomes more confident, and our messages more empathetic, creating a virtuous cycle of positive communication. Even disruptive moments, as comedian Trevor Wallace explains, can transform into unique and memorable opportunities if we approach them with curiosity instead of resistance. Psychologist Carol Dweck distinguishes between fixed mindset, viewing our abilities as immutable, and growth mindset, considering them developable. With a fixed mindset, we avoid challenges and reject criticism. With a growth mindset, we welcome them as learning opportunities. Research shows that those who see themselves as capable of change experience less anxiety when speaking publicly and perform better. To cultivate this mindset, focus on effort rather than results. Adopt a not yet attitude toward difficulties and ask questions that stimulate your improvement. Visualize your goals as a path or mountain to climb, using language like process or adventure to evoke an open-ended journey. When we perceive spontaneous communication situations as threatening, we center all attention on ourselves. To break this dynamic, we must shift our focus to the audience. Who are they? What matters to them? How are they feeling? What do they need from us? Patricia Ryan Madsen, Stanford's improvisation expert, emphasizes that improvisation isn't about you, but about everyone else and how to work together. She suggests studying the audience and environment from the moment you enter a room to gather valuable information about mood, energy levels, and expectations. Remember that in most cases, your audience wants you to succeed. As Madsen says, they aren't Olympic judges looking for mistakes, but humans who are there to support you. Google executive Kathy Bonanno recommends focusing on having a good time with the audience, seeking connection and immediacy, which results in a more relaxed and effective experience. The principle of yes and is central to improvisation. Instead of resisting or criticizing others' ideas with no or yes but, we adopt a stance of affirmation and building on what others propose. This approach pushes us to listen carefully to what others say so we can respond appropriately. When practicing yes and in impromptu speaking situations, we look for areas of alignment with others, even in conflict or negotiation situations. We take these points of agreement as a foundation and return to them periodically, creating space for others to do the same and allowing a positive dynamic to develop. The next play mindset teaches us not to ruminate on past mistakes, but to focus on what comes next. Legendary coach Mike Krzyzewski popularized this concept in sports. Regardless of whether you just failed or succeeded, you must focus on the present moment. As he said, whatever you just did isn't as important as what you're doing right now. When we think about communication, we tend to focus on speaking, but listening is equally crucial for being effective in the moment. We must pay attention to our audience's mental and emotional state to inform what we say. Sometimes the best communication is simply saying nothing. Fred Dust, author of Making Conversation, experienced this when advising the Greek government on selling coastal land. Instead of following the prepared script, he listened carefully to the Greek officials' signals of ambivalence about selling their last waterfront parcel. By articulating their unexpressed concerns, he achieved a deep connection that led the prime minister to seek him out afterward for a more intimate conversation. Three types of noise interfere with our ability to listen effectively: physical noise from the environment, physiological noise, fatigue, hunger, and anxiety, and psychological noise, biases, judgments, and mental rehearsals. These obstacles prevent us from capturing important signals from our audience. Attentive listening allows us to discover unknown information, recognize patterns, and better connect with others. Ari Fleischer, former White House press secretary, called this listening by osmosis, absorbing information to use at opportune moments. Research shows that speakers whose listeners are fully present feel more relaxed and willing to share, while not listening can lead to cultural misunderstandings and missed opportunities. To listen better during spontaneous speaking situations, we must orient ourselves to listen in any interaction, slowing down to be more present and reflecting on what might be happening in others' minds. Collins-Dobbs framework, rhythm, space, and grace, helps us achieve more empathetic listening and better informed communication in the moment. When we reduce our speed when communicating, we become more receptive to messages we might miss. Former journalist Deborah Schifrin uses the killer last question technique and waits in silence, creating space for interviewees to share deeper ideas. We can slow down by putting away our phones, breathing deeply, repeating mantras like "I'm here for you," or practicing pauses during communication. Creating space to reflect on what we've heard allows us to better process information. We can achieve this through clarifying questions like "What makes you believe this?" or "What else can you tell me?" which demonstrate attention and give us time to think. Another strategy is to paraphrase what we've heard, not repeating exactly, but distilling the essence of the message, which extends the present moment and allows us to orient ourselves. This final step teaches us to listen to both others and our inner voice. John's story perfectly illustrates this. When he forgot his notes for his grandmother's eulogy, he trusted his inner voice and his ability to improvise, paying attention to audience reactions and adjusting his speech accordingly. Experts Bradford and Robin point out that we must catch two signals from two different antennas, internal and external. We must validate our feelings and listen to our inner voice while paying attention to others. Structure is fundamental for effective spontaneous communication. Just as a tour guide must provide a clear roadmap to avoid losing their group, we must structure our impromptu communications to keep our audience engaged. Setting expectations from the beginning allows listeners to relax and absorb our message without worrying about what comes next. Although spontaneous communication seems incompatible with structure, structure actually liberates rather than limits us. Structure isn't the enemy of spontaneity, but its ally. When speaking spontaneously, having a roadmap doesn't get us stuck, but frees us. Many confuse structure with lists, but true structure is a narrative that logically connects ideas with beginning, middle, and end. Just as jazz musicians improvise within musical structures or children play better with certain frameworks, we communicate more effectively when we have versatile roadmaps we can apply in spontaneous situations. Structure offers at least four key benefits. First, it maintains the audience's attention and interest by creating logical connections between ideas. Without these clear transitions, we lose our audiences. The best transitions review what has been said and point to what follows within an established logical flow. Even when we improvise, like in Martin Luther King Jr.'s famous "I Have a Dream" speech, an underlying structure, like problem, solution, benefit, guides the development of ideas. The second benefit of structure is that it improves memorability for both the speaker and the audience. Humans remember stories better than isolated data. One study showed that 63% of students remembered stories, while only 5% remembered statistics. Stories activate emotional connections that transform audiences by activating both the rational and emotional parts of the brain. As Jennifer Aker says, those who tell the best stories will become the best leaders. The third benefit of structure is that it facilitates information processing. When we explicitly signal the structure, we help listeners orient themselves. Micah Carroll, editorial director of the Four Dummies brand, explains that they use a clear format with cues for readers, facilitating pathfinding, orienting oneself in the learning journey. Cognitive neuroscience confirms that structuring information increases processing fluency. The brain processes mental images created by narratives much faster than abstract ideas. Structure not only benefits the audience, but also the speaker. When we choose a structure, we discipline our thinking and force ourselves to follow a coherent line of argument. In spontaneous situations, we face two problems: what to say and how to say it. Having a structure solves the how part, freeing mental energy for content. It gives us confidence because we know where we're going. Structure doesn't limit creativity, As James Whittington points out, we can make creative excursions without losing the thread, though we should remember to get back on the road, not settle there and start a family. Key structures for effective communication include PREP, point, reason, example, point, where you make a point, explain the reason, offer illustrations, and return to the point. Problem-solution benefit, that evokes a problem, offers a solution, and discusses its benefits. Comparison-contrast conclusion, that analyzes similarities, differences, and reaches a conclusion. And STAR, situation, task, action, result, that describes an event, discusses the challenge, explains actions taken, and shares results obtained. To master structured communication, constant practice is needed. Sarah could successfully improvise because she was familiar with the what, so what, now what structure. Effective practice requires repetition, reflection, and feedback. Use tools like random question generators or AI to create practice situations. Keep a reflection journal about your daily communications, analyzing both successes and areas for improvement. You don't need to master all structures. Focus on two or three that work best for your common situations. Request honest feedback from trusted people, specifically asking, "What can I do to be better?"
The most powerful communication, both formal and spontaneous, is clear and well-focused. It conveys exactly what the audience needs without distractions, unnecessary verbosity, or confusing jargon. Steve Jobs exemplified this perfectly when presenting the iPod in 2001 with just five words, 1,000 songs in your pocket. This concise phrase communicated the product's core value, distinguished it from competition, and solved a consumer problem. Unfortunately, much everyday communication lacks this clarity, from social conversations that drift off topic to vague corporate responses and unnecessary technical ramblings. Focused messages are precise, designed to achieve a specific effect. To achieve precision, we must consider three dimensions of our communication objectives: what we want the audience to know, information, feel, emotions, and do, actions. Although we tend to focus on informational content, emotions are equally powerful. Studies show that up to 95% of our decisions are shaped by emotional brain systems, and emotionally connected customers are 50% more valuable to businesses. To improve our spontaneous communication, we must clarify these three objectives before speaking, asking ourselves, what do I want them to know? What do I want them to feel? What do I want them to do? The most effective messages are those that the audience perceives as relevant to their own situations. Jim Koch, founder of Boston Beer Company, illustrates this with his golden rule of selling: never ask customers to do something that isn't best for them. This approach requires deeply understanding your audience, who they are, what they want, and what they need. In spontaneous situations, we often fail by not crafting our messages with the audience in mind, mistakenly assuming they share our enthusiasm or interests. One of the most common mistakes in spontaneous communication is over-communicating. Unnecessary complexity makes our messages confusing, creates distance with the audience, and can bore listeners. This complexity arises from the curse of knowledge, knowing too much for our own good, and the curse of passion, rambling out of enthusiasm. Hans Rosling brilliantly demonstrated how to communicate complex ideas accessibly in his shortest TED Talk ever given, where he explained global economic inequality using only 7 stones in less than a minute, avoiding technical jargon and obscure terms. Concision makes messages easier to receive by activating fewer brain processing systems. In our era of reduced attention, we must ask whether everything we say is truly necessary. Leveraging context allows us to reduce words, as demonstrated by cartoonist Hilary Price, who conveys complete stories with minimal words, providing only 49% of the information and letting readers complete the rest. To combat verbosity, we can analyze recordings of our speech, review our text messages for patterns of verbal excess, and practice brevity challenges, like summarizing messages in 140 characters or writing haikus. Google's mission to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful demonstrates how even a complex company can condense its purpose into just 12 effective words. To improve our communicative focus, we must work gradually on the four dimensions: clarity, relevance, accessibility, and concision, without trying to perfect them all at once. Each dimension can be taken too far. Excessive goal orientation can make us rigid. Excessive adaptation can limit us to specific audiences. Oversimplifying can trivialize our message, and extreme concision can create confusion. Balance is key to creating messages that resonate powerfully with our audience. Small talk, though dreaded by many, can generate valuable connections when handled properly. The what, so what, now what structure is ideal for these situations, allowing us to both initiate conversations and respond effectively. However, the real secret to success is following the first commandment of small talk: make it about them, not about us. We should favor supportive responses that invite the other person to share more, rather than responses that shift attention to ourselves. To master small talk, we must balance self-disclosure, seeking a two-way exchange where both share personal information at comparable levels. Research shows that deeper conversations generate more meaningful connections than superficial ones. We should also avoid direct questions that feel like interrogations, opting for open-ended questions about positive topics that facilitate smooth and pleasant conversation. Instead of viewing small talk as a competition where we try to be the most interesting person, we should approach it as a team sport where everyone works together to maintain a pleasant conversation. This approach reduces our pressure and facilitates genuine connections. We can help by paraphrasing what we hear from our conversation partner and ending our comments with questions that facilitate smooth transitions between topics. Resisting the temptation to prematurely abandon conversations out of fear of missing something better, FOMO, is crucial for establishing meaningful connections. Instead of swiping left and jumping between superficial conversations, we should focus on being present, listening attentively, and allowing interactions to develop naturally. People need time to relax and share interesting things, and valuable connections require patience. To avoid tensions in conversations about sensitive topics, we should avoid assumptions about others' viewpoints, listen carefully before opining, and use paraphrasing to demonstrate understanding. Conversational receptiveness, showing openness to opposing viewpoints, facilitates more productive and pleasant connections. When we demonstrate genuine interest in understanding others' perspectives, they're more likely to consider ours. By applying the first commandment of small talk, we can structure effective responses in different social scenarios using the what, so what, now what format. Whether at a wedding with strangers, a professional convention, or an awkward family gathering, this approach allows us to share relevant personal information while redirecting attention to our conversation partner with open-ended questions that facilitate the natural continuation of the conversation. The methodology presented in Think Fast, Talk Smart consists of 6 essential steps: creating a personalized plan to manage anxiety, calm, reflecting on our communication approach and seeing these situations as opportunities, unblock, adopting new mindsets and reimagining mistakes as learning, reframe, listening deeply to others and our intuition, listen, leveraging narrative structures to make our ideas more convincing, structure, and focusing the audience on the essence of our message with precision and concision. Paradoxically, to excel in spontaneous situations, we must prepare in advance, practicing skills that will free us to express our ideas and personality to the fullest. A persistent myth is that the best communicators express themselves perfectly. We see TED Talk presenters or leaders like Steve Jobs and Michelle Obama and assume they're naturally charismatic. The reality is that these presentations are scripted, rehearsed, and sometimes edited over months. It's erroneous to evaluate our spontaneous communication by the standards of prepared presentations. Instead of aspiring to perfection, we must accept imperfection and focus on participating better in the moment. Obsessing over being correct only increases the likelihood of communicating poorly, freezing us and missing the opportunity to adapt authentically and spontaneously. Speaking extemporaneously is more like jazz than classical music. It's about improvising and staying in tune with those around us, not memorizing every note. We must set aside what we think we know about communication and master new skills, adapting quickly, calibrating our audience's needs, and managing our fears. With a little effort, we can control our anxiety when speaking spontaneously instead of letting it control us. The goal isn't to eliminate anxiety completely. A little stress can motivate us and improve our performance, but to prevent it from hindering us. The best approach is twofold, addressing the immediate symptoms and the underlying sources of anxiety. Annabelle Williams, Paralympic gold medalist and sports commentator, faced an extreme spontaneous communication situation during the 2022 Commonwealth Games when she had to replace a colleague as co-presenter with only 4 hours preparation. When she went on air, her co-host read his prepared text, and she had to speak spontaneously about sports she barely knew to more than 1 million viewers. The author uses this example to illustrate that we all face moments of spontaneous communication under pressure. And although our situations may not be as extreme, the think fast, talk smart method can help us feel more comfortable and confident in those moments. There's hope for those who struggle with spontaneous speech. Archana, a student who had changed countries and professions, avoided speaking due to insecurity and anxiety. After learning and practicing specific tools, she managed to relax and be herself, rejecting the critical voices in her head. Soon, she was leading meetings without anxiety and even volunteering to speak in public. Although some people are naturally more extroverted or witty, what truly determines our communication ability is how we approach this task. Most of us pigeonhole ourselves by conceiving spontaneous social interaction in a way that scares us, preventing us from functioning well. By reducing the pressure on ourselves and practicing key skills, we can all improve and even enjoy these situations.